You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Psychiatry Smartcast, micro-learning podcast series hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Dr. Sylvia Hanna, Medical Director at Med Learning Group, and I'll be hosting today's podcast, which is the first in a series of three podcasts. In this series, we will discuss three patient cases. A patient with an initial episode of MDD that has rapidly caused functional impairment and suicidal ideation. In the second case, a woman with recurrent MDD who responded to escitalopram with past major depressive episodes. And in the third case, a patient with recurrent depressive symptoms who is not responding to previously effective SSRIs. In the first episode, we will review a case of an initial episode of MDD that has rapidly caused functional impairment and suicidal ideation. This podcast will include discussion of the treatment management strategies and applicable clinical trial data. Joining me today is Dr. Anita Clayton, Wilford W. Spradlin Professor and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences at University of Virginia School of Medicine in Charlottesville, Virginia. Welcome, Dr. Clayton. It is so good to have you with us today.
I'm excited to be here and talk about these patients.
Well, wonderful. Dr. Clayton, it is estimated that 30% to 50% of patients experience inadequate response to antidepressant therapy. What qualifies as an inadequate response in clinical practice?
So we think of response as a 50% or greater improvement in depressive symptoms, usually using a validated rating scale. And remission is dropping below a threshold where the person really doesn't meet criteria for depression. An inadequate response is when people experience anywhere between more than zero and up to but less than 50% improvement. A complete lack of efficacy or lack of response is when the patient would say, I feel no better whatsoever, and I maybe even feel worse. So we're looking for somebody who's been adequately treated with the right dose and the appropriate duration to expect a therapeutic response, but they've not achieved a 50% improvement in their symptoms.
And what are some of the treatment options for patients with MDD with inadequate response?
So the treatment choices really include augmenting the antidepressant with another therapy, increasing the dose of the current antidepressant, switching to a different antidepressant, presumably often with a different mechanism of action, or combining antidepressants, also using two different antidepressants that have unique or different mechanisms of action. Clinicians should tailor treatment strategies based on patient's response, their tolerability, the disease severity, and patient preferences.
Dr. Clayton, let's discuss a case of a patient with an initial episode of MDD with an inadequate response.
Yes, this is the case of a 32-year-old woman with an initial episode of MDD with anxiety starting 6 weeks ago that has rapidly caused functional impairment and suicidal ideation. Other symptoms include sleep disturbance, which includes initial insomnia, broken sleep, and feeling exhausted during the day, trouble concentrating, low motivation or difficulty initiating and completing tasks, and feeling she's let everyone down. She reports wishing she could go to sleep and not wake up. She also reports thoughts that others would be better off with her gone, but she denies a plan or intent to kill herself at this time. She also describes presenteeism at work. Her PHQ-9 score is 22. She prefers to avoid insomnia and weight gain, but is willing to try anything. She's on oral contraceptive pills as her only medication. She wants to start a family, but not feeling like this. She has no other health issues. There is a family history of MDD and anxiety disorders responsive to SSRIs.
Dr. Clayton, you mentioned the PHQ-9, which is the Patient Health Questionnaire 9. What does that measure, and how should a healthcare provider interpret the results? In this case, the patient had a 22.
Yes. So the PHQ-9 has nine questions, although there is a 10th that asks about how difficult is it to manage some of these symptoms. The review period is over the last 2 weeks, and this is a patient-reported outcome, validated and easy to use and repeat over time. So you can find out sort of the severity and what types of symptoms the individual is having at baseline, and then you can follow that PHQ-9 score over time to monitor for improvement. Each of the items has a response of not at all, several days, more than half the days, and nearly every day. This is in the last 2 weeks. And a score of 10 or more suggests moderate depression, and severe depression is 20 to 27. So in this case, a PHQ-9 score of 22 indicates she has severe depression.
And with severe depression, what would you recommend at this point for this patient?
Because of the family history, that's sort of a cheap genetics test that if a first degree relative had depression, you've got some of their genetic makeup that you share. And so response to SSRIs in her family members indicates that that may be a good choice for her as well. So we initiate an SSRI, and in discussions with her, we start escitalopram 10 milligrams per day.
And what additional treatment would you recommend after partial response?
So it's important to potentially escalate the dose and maximize it to an effective therapeutic dose before necessarily adding a second medication. And in fact, I talked with her about the choice of escitalopram, what might be the next step, and she was agreeable to that treatment. So she's agreeable to upping the escitalopram because she's not experiencing significant side effects. We're also going to add another intervention because of my concerns about the severity of her depression, the thoughts of death, and the need to accelerate recovery. Given that she wants to start a family at 32 years of age, once the depression is remitted, it would make sense to plan ahead for that eventuality and prescribe something that could safely be used as much as we know and continued through the pregnancy. Psychotherapy would be safe, but it takes much longer for initial improvement. With bupropion or mirtazapine, the benefits appear to outweigh the risks. Among atypical antipsychotics, quetiapine minimally crosses the placenta. So we have discussed these issues, and she is agreeable to the increase in escitalopram.
After increasing escitalopram to 20 milligrams a day and initiating psychotherapy, what additional treatment would you recommend after partial response with side effects of sexual dysfunction and cognitive impairment?
So we discuss adding vortioxetine between 10 and 15 milligrams per day. Published data show low rates of sexual dysfunction on 10 to 15 milligrams per day of vortioxetine, in fact, not separating from placebo. And improved cognition is also seen with vortioxetine monotherapy, more than is seen when an individual is taking an SSRI and vortioxetine is added. But less is known about vortioxetine in pregnancy. Once remission is achieved, we would try tapering off the escitalopram so she's on monotherapy and we might see the best improvement in cognition and sexual functioning. Bupropion has been demonstrated to decrease TESD with SSRIs in randomized controlled trials and improve cognition and focus in non-randomized controlled trials without known teratogenic effects. Adding mirtazapine to SSRIs has been shown in small trials to reduce SSRI-induced treatment-emergent sexual dysfunction, but data are limited on cognitive effects. Switching to an SNRI likely doesn't add much and won't build on the response to escitalopram.
Dr. Clayton, you mentioned including the patient. Can you elaborate on how you included the patient in the shared decision-making to ensure a patient-centered approach?
Sure. We talked about a lot of things that were important to her in the consideration for treatment. She was fearful about potentially self-harm. Her sleep was really disturbed. She really did not want to continue to feel like this because it was impacting on her functionality. She also talked about wanting to start a family, and we wanted to consider that in our potential prescribing practice. We also talked about the options, particularly when we were looking at what to do when the 10 milligram dose of escitalopram didn't work. Did she really want to have an increase in dose? Did she want a second medicine? Did she want to switch? What kinds of side effects did she want to avoid? And she told us that problems with sexual functioning and also cognition were areas she would like to see improvement in. So she was able to help make that decision, including her patient preferences, in the final choice of treatment.
Dr. Clayton, do you have an update on this patient?
So we started vortioxetine 10 milligrams per day with a planned increase to 15 milligrams after 2 weeks, if tolerated. The PHQ-9 shows marked improvement after 4 weeks at the 15 milligram per day dose. We discussed tapering of the escitalopram after another 4 to 8 weeks on the combination of two antidepressants, and the patient agrees. A slow taper was begun with monitoring of maintenance of efficacy using the PHQ-9. We discontinue escitalopram as appropriate.
That's a wonderful outcome for her. Thank you, Dr. Clayton. That was very informative. We learned a lot today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please join us in the other two podcasts where we discuss a woman with recurrent MDD who responded to escitalopram with past major depressive episodes, and this patient with recurrent depressive symptoms who is not responding to previously effective SSRIs. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Takeda, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.